Welcome to the Bruce Siski Show. Follow the Bruce Siski Show on Twitter to interact anytime. Got something on your mind? You can text Bruce during the show by using the short code 84454. You're listening to the Bruce Siski Show on 610 and FM 103.9 KDAL.
10:11. It is a Wednesday, 24th of April, 2024. Bruce Siski Show on KDAL. Great to have you along this morning. We'll run through some headlines coming up, and there's plenty to talk about. But first, we go down to the Twin Cities. Timberwolves 2, Suns 0. I know it's just holding serve, but it's so rare up here to even have home court in a playoff series, much less hold serve in it. Second time it's happened in franchise history. We can celebrate that a little bit. Alan Horton, Timberwolves Radio Network. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Bruce. Yeah, I think 2-0 is something to celebrate. You get this opportunity. Hey, you should celebrate every single win you can get. And to go up 2-0 against a really good Suns team, hey, I'll take it.
If I had told you on Friday that you were going to wrap up the game on Game 2 on Tuesday with Wolves in 4 chance raining through Target Center, what would you have said?
I think pleasantly pleased that would be the case. Okay, so that means we would be up 2-0. So that would be, especially after the way there was still, you know, in my mind, there was still some doubt after what happened in the regular season that might kind of creep back in, and the Suns showed they were the better team in the regular season. But boy, I tell you what, the Wolves have shown that they're the better team in the postseason. They've been better offensively. They've been better defensively. And you know what they've done, Bruce, is they've been able to avoid getting into some of these close games, which we've seen in other playoff series, the absolute chaos down the stretch. With, you know, bodies flying everywhere, you want to avoid these close games as much as possible. And the Wolves have done that. Frank Vogel's had to throw in the towel midway through the fourth both times.
And there's a randomness too, right, that comes with these close games. You can play as well as you want to play. You can do everything right, and if one guy makes a shot, all of a sudden you're on the wrong side of the scoreboard.
Yeah, and there's some weird plays happening too. I mean, the Lakers-Nuggets game, you know, Jokic almost threw it away. He almost made this horrendous play, but it turned into a game-tying or a go-ahead three to Michael Porter Jr. You saw the end of the Knicks 76ers game, the absolute chaos after Brunson hits this incredible three, and then they inbound to Maxey. They absolutely double-team him, foul him about three times. He falls to the floor. There's no timeout given. There's no foul call. All of a sudden, the ball squirts free. There's a go-ahead three for Dante DiVincenzo. You don't want to get into that randomness of a couple of possessions to decide the game.
Alan Horton, Timberwolves Radio Network. Let's talk about these two games. And, you know, we chatted on Friday, and I said I don't want to put too much of an emphasis on game one. But given how the regular season series went, I just felt like I needed to see this team play well against Phoenix. And they certainly did that. A whole lot of things went right in game one. As you said, Frank Vogel throws in the towel in both games, and that starts with the first game, having to, you know, kind of give it up there in the fourth quarter because you know you have no chance to come back and win it. What'd you see? What'd you like about game one?
I love the way the Wolves started the game. I thought that first quarter was going to be crucial. It was something that Chris Finch and the staff talked about all week. We've got to get off to better starts. In the regular season, the Wolves went down double digits in each of those first quarters against the Suns. And I thought in the opening 5 minutes, they made a statement. I don't think too much to themselves because I think they knew they could play this level of basketball, but I think they made a statement to the Suns that, you know what, that regular season, that's not what's happening here. We are the team that won 56 games. We are the team that's the 3 seed, has home court advantage, and with the number one defense. And it showed in that first 5 minutes. So I thought they made a statement in that first quarter. Even though they didn't win the first quarter because they were down by one technically, I thought that first 12 minutes set the tone for the rest of the game.
Anthony Edwards comes out of halftime and just takes that game over. And you know, it's just another glimpse of the special player that he is. And to see him do it against his idol in Kevin Durant, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was. He has risen to the occasion in big games in his career, and this one probably ranks up there amongst the best. I mean, when you consider the factors and the playoff opponent and all that's at stake, I mean, he scored or assisted on 17 of the 21 points the Wolves had in the 21-5 run to push that game from a 4-point lead to a 20-point lead, and it was basically over from there. But Ant, you know, any he did have the 6 turnovers in that game, and but what I liked about in the third quarter was that he really he just wasn't bullish on one part of his game. He just wasn't stopping and popping for threes every time. He got to the rim a couple of times when it was available. He settled for some floater shots when it was available. When he got switches, he pulled up in the mid-range when it was available, and he did hit a couple of threes in that stretch. And then, right when he's got it going, at the end of the third quarter, he's not hunting for his shot. No, he sets up Nikhil Alexander-Walker for a three that pushes that lead to 20. I just thought he played really sensational basketball, especially in that third quarter.
These series, it does not matter what sport it is. These series are they come down to adjustments a lot of times game to game. We knew Phoenix was going to adjust, and one of the things I thought they would do was try to do some things to try to get Devin Booker a little more free, because it just didn't feel like he ever got free in game one. Well, guess what? It didn't work in game two either.
No, it didn't, and they did run more stuff for him. They ran more action. They tried to get him going downhill more. They ran him off more screens, but the Wolves were, again, for the second straight game, on point and showing you why they have the number one defense in the NBA. Jaden McDaniels, Anthony Edwards, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, everyone once again playing on a string, and then there's Rudy protecting everything. It's just Rudy's been great the last two games. I think the Wolves have gotten back to a defensive level that we probably haven't seen since the first half of the season. Chris Finch made mention of that after the game last night. You know, the second half of the season, it's such a grind. It's so hard to maintain, that level that the Wolves were playing at. But they are benefiting, too, I think, from – now, this game was officiated a little bit differently than game one, and I thought a big part of the win last night was – so that second quarter – the fouls started adding up. I mean, you had Cat with three. You had other players accumulating fouls, and the Suns were getting to the free throw line. They got there 15 times in the first half, and I asked Corliss Williamson, our assistant coach, at halftime for the halftime interview, hey, are you guys stressing that this game is different than game one when a lot of stuff was let go? I felt like things weren't let go in the first half last night, and he's like, absolutely. We've got to adjust slightly to this officiating, because we can't just keep sending the Suns to the free throw line 30 times. That's what they were on pace for. So they got to the free throw line 4 times in the second half. The Wolves did a really nice adjustment of just being a little less aggressive, a little less handsy, because some of those calls were being made in the first half last night, unlike game one.
How, as an observer, how would you prefer? And I know it feels at least like the way Saturday was officiated would benefit the Timberwolves a little more, because they are the more physical team, especially on defense. Yeah. How would you prefer to see a game officiated? Because I'm a fan of you need to call what needs to be called, but at the same time, I hate when games come down to who picks up more ticky-tack fouls.
Yep, no doubt about it. I think most fans do, and it's I do think it benefits the Wolves. It benefited them in game one, even though they committed more fouls and sent Phoenix to the free throw line more. I think in the long run, that benefited the Wolves' defense. I mean, Phoenix is more of a finesse team when you look at Booker and Beal and Durant. They like to operate in space, and the more physical you can be with those guys who settle on mid-range jumpers, that affects those shots. And I thought the Wolves benefited from that in game one. And then I thought the adjustment in game two was crucial, because it's been tough. There's no doubt about it. It's been tough for Phoenix to score, and you just can't expect to win if you're going to let these guys have a parade to the free throw line. The Wolves did a nice job of limiting their free throw attempts in the second half.
Alan Horton, Timberwolves Radio Network. Jaden McDaniels, was that his best game as a Timberwolf, as a pro? My goodness.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, 20. I mean, all the numbers he put up were playoff career highs. He's only played in 8 playoff games, so there's that. But he was super aggressive, especially on a night when Ant didn't have it going offensively. Cat didn't have it going offensively. It was Mike. It was Rudy. It was Jaden who stepped up and combined for 61 points on 61% shooting. But Jaden was once again spectacular defensively, and this time hunting for his offense and being really aggressive. And guess what? Becoming a problem at the offensive end that now Phoenix has to deal with. I mean, you can't just shove Durant on him or whoever you want to put on him and kind of rest up and let those guys catch their breath for the offensive end. It makes such a big difference when you put Booker, Beal, and Durant in actions at the other end of the floor and make them defend. And guess what? They wear down just like everyone does. And so It was great to see Jaden step up, rise up into that moment. He's had two games, Bruce, that I would say I think Wolves fans and probably coaches, if they admit it in the front office, have been hoping for more games from Jaden like that. His aggression level has been sensational. And it's we've seen it in glimpses, but to put it together in two straight games in a crucial playoff series, that's been really encouraging to see.
I know Cat had the near meltdown when he fouled Durant, and I think it was the fourth quarter, his fourth foul of the game. But it felt like the Suns were the ones that were getting really frustrated with the officials.
Yeah they were. And Frank Vogel, eventually picked up the technical that had been building. But a lot of complaining by the Suns. And it's awesome to see when you're not in that situation, when your team is handling the opponents and they start complaining. Booker was whining about fouls. I don't know if you saw it on TV. They had a close-up of two fans wearing a Devin Booker crying shirt.
I
His
did.
Face was on their shirt. It was awesome. It was so good. And Booker has just been a real struggle, and that's what you have to do. You have to make your opponents struggle, and you're going to face good teams and good opponents in the postseason. And you just have to make life difficult for them. And guess what? The Wolves are doing that. They're making life really difficult for Durant, Beal, and Booker in particular.
I don't follow Kendrick Perkins on X. He works for ESPN, played the NBA for a long time. But he seems to have become a massive Timberwolves fan here in these first two games of the series. I don't know if you saw what he posted after the game last night. I can't read it verbatim because there's a naughty acronym in there, but basically he says, "Everybody making excuses for the Suns offense, please don't blame the coach. The fact of the matter is these dogs on Minnesota made them tap out. Don't mind me, carry on."
Yeah, somewhere along the line, Kendrick Perkins, I don't know if he's ever seen the team in person, but he's become a big fan. I think it happened somewhere during the year. He's been on board. I think he's a big Anthony Edwards supporter, as a lot of people have become. And he has been right out there singing the praises of the Wolves when sometimes that narrative goes to, hey, what is wrong with the Phoenix offense? Why can't they? Well, yeah, it's because they're going up against the number one defense. And if they're going up against perimeter defenders like Nikhil and Jaden and Ant. And then, oh, yeah, Rudy Gobert, the most overrated player in the NBA. I don't think so. He's been sensational the last two games. I mean, Rudy is just so solid. And his free throw shooting has been perfect. His decision-making offensively, defense, just been awesome. I mean, it's really fun to see, especially when the Suns have the ball next time, fans. Just watch the Wolves' defense. Watch how they move. Watch how they make life difficult for the opponents. In this day and age of offensive-minded basketball and shooting threes, that's all great, but it's fun to see a team get it done at the defensive end like the Wolves do.
Hey, what with Rudy, is this just the switch comes on for the playoffs? Or I'm not saying he wasn't good this season. The guy's got a very good chance and probably should be defensive player of the year. But it just seems like he's been much more impactful. Is that a matchup thing? Is this just kind of this experienced player rising up to the occasion in the postseason? Or is it a combination?
Yeah, I think it's probably a combination, but I do think Rudy, guys like Rudy and Mike have been there before. They know what it takes to win in the postseason. They're finally in a position. They really weren't in a position last year, having to go through the play-in and be the eighth seed against Denver to have a realistic chance to win that series. It would have been a huge upset. This year, it's not an upset. This is as a three seed, you're supposed to beat the sixth seed. And so I think they've come out and set the standard of play. And even though Mike didn't shoot it well in game one, he came back and shot it great in game two. There was no doubt about that he was going to recover from that. But even in game one, when his shot wasn't there, 7 assists, 1 turnover, doing Mike Conley-like things, still having an impact. So he and Rudy have kind of set the tone here in the postseason. And Rudy has just been incredibly solid in everything he's done. It's awesome to see him snare rebounds. It is great to see him find some space inside. He's been scoring really well in these two games. He's just done so many things right, and then he patrols the defensive end. And how many times do we have to see it? It's just someone dribbles in, they look at Rudy, and they say, I'm good. Never mind, I'm going the other way. And they kick back out, and they have to start their offense all over again. It happens time and time again. And it's awesome to see because Rudy has a presence unlike a presence like very few in the NBA on the defensive end of the floor.
It's funny because we were at that game in January against the Clippers, and you know, it was Hacker Rudy in the fourth quarter because he couldn't make a free throw. And when he started making them down the stretch of the game, the place was the loudest the Target Center got that night was when Rudy's making his free throws to clinch the game at the end of it. And it was part of it was because you know they're going to win. Part of it is, oh my gosh, he's making free throws. This is great. Now the guy's automatic at the line.
It was awesome. I asked him before the game, we interviewed him before last night's game, and I asked him, hey, when you're going 6-7, can you feel the energy of the crowd every time you hit a free throw? Because I can certainly sense it. Everybody in the building can sense it, that it builds when he hits free throws. They start to get behind him. He's like, no doubt. I can feel the energy build. I feel the love. He's like, even when I do have those off nights, I still feel it from the crowd. Like, I can feel them supporting me. So he feels it. And he goes 6-7. I don't know off the top of my head what he went last night. I think he just missed one.
I think it was 6-7 again.
6-7 again. Amazing. That's just it. And I think it's a huge boost when he does that. It's not just two people. It's not just two free throws being hit by anybody. It's like, no, it means more because the crowd knows that it's such. It can be such a struggle at the free throw line, but he has been on point these last two games.
Wolves are 46-52 at the foul line in the series.
Yeah, they've shot excellent.
That's great.
It's been and they weren't great in the regular season. They shot 78%. That was 18th in the league, so very average. And you know, when you look at what it takes to earn free throws, and then you don't take advantage of them, it's frustrating at times. So there were a lot of games this year where the Wolves just did not have good free throw shooting nights, but they've been on point, which I just think speaks to their mental state and how dialed in they're in. Because what is free throws about? It's about routine. It's about focus. And I think everybody has kind of been on point and focused in these two games, and it's shown.
9:30 for Game 3 on Friday, which, as we know, in this age of television ruling everything, translates to about 9:50 for a start time back here in Minnesota on Friday night for Game 3 against the Suns. And as Mike Babcock, the former coach of the Red Wings, once said, as this team was sweeping somebody out of the playoffs, this is a race to four wins. It's not best of seven. It's a race to four wins. You don't want to let Phoenix back in the series when they're at home. What adjustments do you expect from the Suns as we go into Game 3 on Friday? As they try to get back in this thing?
Well, it's got to be, the desperation level has to be at an all-time high for them. They cannot afford to lose three games in a row. They cannot afford to lose on their home floor. You know, it's interesting. Phoenix got off to a really slow start this year, right? 14-15, and then they go 38-15 after Christmas. Fourth best record in the league, top 10 offense, top 10 defense. They really seem to click. They got Beal healthy. That three-headed monster of Durant, Beal, and Booker was really clicking. And over these first two games, that's been a struggle for them, as we've talked about, and they're down 0-2. You can start to see some discord a little bit. Things have not been running as smoothly, and that happens when you lose two playoff games in a row. But, and you see Frank Vogel, the pressure starts to build on him. There is a lot of, I think, a ton of pressure on this Phoenix team. And, you know, they might not have Grayson Allen going forward. Boy, he turns his ankle again. Same right ankle. I just cringe because anybody who's done anything and twisted an ankle and then done it a second time in some sort of short period afterwards, that's even worse than the initial one. And the initial one is awful. Oh, it's an awful feeling. It makes me queasy just thinking about it. But if Grayson Allen can't go, boy, Bruce, that changes their whole lineup. They are not very deep, and all of a sudden, if you have to put Royce O'Neal or Eric Gordon in the starting lineup, that leaves Drew Eubanks and either Gordon or O'Neal coming off the bench. They don't have a lot of options. I wonder if at some point they might throw Josh Okogie out there. Josh is not known for his offense. Former Timberwolf, as fans know, but he's known for his defense. And can you put him out there to provide, you know, something to slow down maybe Anthony Edwards or one of the other Wolves? Who knows? But that leads to problems too, because Josh is a liability at the offensive end, and now teams can sag off of him and you know, that's what makes Grayson Allen so good. You can't sag off of Durant, Beal, and Booker because you've got the number one 3-point shooter in the NBA spotting up on the wing. That's a different story with Josh Okogie, but you know they're going to come out absolutely flying on Friday night. And you know, as exciting as a 2-0 start is, Rudy was on the postgame show last night, and he said, you know what, all we did was hold serve. We just did what we were supposed to do, win our two home games. And there is something to that. And I think that speaks to, you know, a guy in Rudy who has been there and done that. He knows they haven't clinched or had an advantage yet. You're supposed to win your first two home games, and so the Wolves have done that. And as good as they've played, they might even have to play a little bit better on Friday night, because you know the Suns are going to come out flying.
Yeah, I feel like if the Wolves are missing shots the way they missed them in the first half last night, they could be in trouble on Friday. Oof.
Yeah, see, that's a key, too, because Suns were only able to build an 8-point lead despite, I thought, dominating for about 10 or 11 minutes stretch. And the Wolves pulled them back in at the end of the second quarter. You have to get separation there. Now, if that happens in Phoenix, there's no doubt in my mind that that crowd and that energy probably pushes that lead to, you know, 14 or 15. And then maybe it's a different story. You're right. You don't, especially on the road, you can't recover normally if you're the road team having a really poor shooting stretch of 10, 11, 12 minutes.
Yeah, and it's not like the shots weren't there. They were there. They just couldn't knock them down. So hopefully that changes going into Friday. And hopefully you can get some sunshine out there and enjoy yourself in Arizona for a couple of days and hopefully call two more wins. And let's get a nice break for this team before round two.
Ooh, that'd be nice. That'd be nice. Yeah, it's going to be fun, and I hope fans are enjoying it, because it's been awesome over these two games, and they're not done yet by any stretch.
Safe travels. We'll check in next week once you're back in Minnesota, all right?
Thanks, Bruce. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Alan Horton, Timberwolves Radio Network. You'll have the call Friday night, Game 3 from Arizona, and whatever they're calling that arena now, I can't remember anymore. In Phoenix, 9 o'clock for the coverage, 9:30 for the tip-off Friday for Game 3. Well, 9:50, as we said. Over on AM 710. Full sports schedule, KDAL610.com. We're brought to you by Sanju Two Harbors, where the cars are, 1032 at KDAL.
The Bruce Siski Show.
You were literally too stupid to insult. Thank you.
On 610 and FM 103.9, KDAL.
A couple more headlines to run through. We'll do that. Get you set for what's happening tonight and what's happening on the radio show the rest of the week, which is truncated because we have early twins tomorrow. We'll preview that for you and more as we hit up on 1038 and a CBS News update next. Bruce Siski Show continues, 610, 103.9 KDAL.
The Bruce Siski Show.
You know what? I didn't want to play this card, certainly not this early, but guess what? Guess who's got the Subaru Impreza? Me. Guess who's got all the money? Me. Guess who's got a winning personality? Me. What do you have? You have a nice hairline, fine. You have a strong jaw, fine. But I gotta tell you something, mister. Your personality needs some work.
On 610 and FM 103.9, KDAO.
10:43, we have no show for you tomorrow, early Brad, because the Twins 11:30 pregame tomorrow to wrap up their homestand against the Chicago White Sox. Chris Long, KSTP Television on Friday. We'll talk some Wolves. We'll talk some Twins, some NBA, or NBA. How about the NFL draft? That's what's happening starting tomorrow night with round number one in Detroit. Vikings have two first-round picks. Well, for now, they have two first-round picks. What happens tomorrow night? So we have Matthew Caller from Purple Insider on the radio show on Monday, and I would encourage you to go listen to that entire conversation at KDAL610.com on the podcast page. If you don't want to do that, I will paraphrase for you what the working theory is regarding the Vikings. So they made the trade, what's it been now, 6 weeks since they made the deal for the extra first-round pick with the Houston Texans. And I think a lot of people at that time, and Matthew and I both admitted it during that conversation, we both assumed that the Vikings made that trade because they had something else coming, and we thought it was going to happen almost immediately. It has been, what, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, whatever it is. It hasn't happened yet. So the working theory is we all are pretty sure Caleb Williams is going number one to the Bears. They might as well just come out and say it. And we don't know what the Capitals. Boy, I'm off to a great start. What the Commanders are going to do with the number two pick. Could it be Jaden Daniels? Could it be Drake May? Could it be somebody else? We don't know. If it's not Drake May, and he's still on the board at number three, that's where the Vikings could make a deal with the Patriots for the third pick to take Drake May, because they like Drake May. The belief is that's the guy they want. They've basically said it. They might as well have said his name. So that's what we think. Obviously, we don't know that, but that's the working theory going into round one tomorrow night. The Vikings also, whether Drake May gets taken by Washington, they can't work out a deal with the Patriots. maybe somebody else makes a better deal for the Patriots and they trade to somebody else. The Broncos want a quarterback. The Raiders probably want a quarterback. They're all picking around the same spot. So we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow night. But that's the working theory. If they can't get Drake May, now the question is, do they still move up? And we don't know the answer to that. You know, how much do they like Jaden Daniels? How much do they like J.J. McCarthy? I could talk myself into being a massive fan of J.J. McCarthy. I could also talk myself into not being a massive fan of J.J. McCarthy. I know this. I'm really happy that J.J. McCarthy won't be taken by my favorite football team, because my favorite football team is not taking a quarterback in the first round unless something really screwy happens, and I don't think that will. So that's going in tomorrow. The Packers, by the way, at 25th in round one. What happens ahead of them on the board? Is there an offensive tackle that they like? Is there a cornerback that they like? Is there a safety that they like? I could see any of those things. Maybe if there's a linebacker that could help solidify the middle of the defense and give them more of an attack mentality there, I don't know. But and that's the other thing with the Packers, because they've got a new defensive coordinator, they've got a new scheme with Jeff Hafley. Your guess is as good as mine what they're going to do. And that's fine. I'm okay with that. And we'll recap all that. Friday morning, round one, we'll recap at least and get you set for what's going to happen on the weekend. If you are a Bulldog hockey fan, schedule's out for next season. You can look at it, umvbulldogs.com. I know there's a lot of people that enjoy traveling occasionally to support the team elsewhere, not just parents, by the way. There's a lot of fans that like to do this. And the dates that you want to circle if you're a traveling Bulldog fan, the first road games of the season, October 11th and 12th at UMass Lowell. You know, it's an easy flight to Boston. You drive like a half hour to Lowell. Ain't that bad. Lowell's a nice building. It's an interesting town. So that might be worth a look. But the one that I think a lot of folks are going to circle is December 6th and 7th. This is the Bulldogs' first ever trip to play at Arizona State. Arizona State joins the NCHC for the 24-25 season, and the Bulldogs go to Tempe December 6th and 7th and play at Mullett Arena. And I would think there'd be a lot of Bulldog fans looking to make that trip for a couple of different reasons. One, they've never been there before. They've never played at Arizona State. Two, these are the Bulldogs' last games before holiday break, which means it's a great opportunity for fans to maybe extend the old stay and see some things that they haven't seen before. Because there's not been a whole lot of reason over the years to, as a college hockey fan, go to Arizona. Here's one. Looking forward to that one the first weekend of December. Some key home dates. The opener, October 5th against Bemidji State at Amsoil Arena. October 18th and 19th, they host the Gophers. November 8th and 9th, they kick off the NCHC season with North Dakota. And they get St. Cloud State in Duluth January 10th and 11th. The St. Cloud State women play in Duluth that weekend as well. That may or may not be a doubleheader weekend here on KDAL. We haven't figured that out yet. The women's schedule is still tentative, so we're awaiting the official word on that, and then we'll get that set up for you as well. But if you want to see the Bulldog schedule, umvbulldogs.com has it. Also, check out the Bulldog Awards from last night. Lots of great student-athletes honored last night. The full list of winners, and you can actually watch the award show on the website, umbbulldogs.com. Timberwolves, as we mentioned with Allen, up 2-0. The Bucks are not, as Pascal Siakam puts up 37, and the Pacers win 125-108 last night at Fiserv. Siakam, according to Stats Perform, is the first NBA player to open a postseason with consecutive 35-point, 10-rebound performances since Wilt Chamberlain in 1967. That's pretty decent. Damian Lillard, again, a big first half. This time, 26 in the first half. Only 8 in the second half. 34 for the night. The Pacers shot the lights out. I think they were 10 of 20 on threes in the first half. And it carried over. They kept shooting very, very well. They shot 56% for the game, 16 of 36, about 44% on threes, and they did enough defensively to cause problems. They rebounded really well. They moved the ball really well. 38 assists on 50 made shots last night for the Pacers. That's a good team. That's an impressive performance. And we all knew, I think, going in that this was not going to be an easy series for the Bucks. I don't want to say they have to have Giannis back. Certainly he would help, especially at the defensive end. The Bucks just don't have anybody who can consistently affect Siakam's offensive game the way Giannis can. But if he's not right, if he's not completely healthy, there's really no point in bringing him back this early. We'll see. Game 3, Friday, 4:30 start time in Indianapolis. Thank you, Sanju. Sanju Polaris, sanju.com, up the expressway, Highway 61. Wrap it up in a moment, 10:50 at KDAL.
KDAL at your fingertips.
I'll tell you, these guys have a wonderful stream thing.
Download the free KDAL mobile app.
10:59, Twins White Sox tonight. Ryan versus Crochet at 6:40 here on KDAL. No show tomorrow with the Twins playing at noon. Brad's on at 10. We'll have the Twins pregame at 11:30. We are back on Friday. Chris Long, KSTP. We talk Vikings in the NFL draft, Timberwolves in the NBA playoffs, and a whole lot more. Brad's up next. Have a great Wednesday. Thank you so much for listening.
This has been the Bruce Siski Show. Hit us up on Twitter at Bruce Siski Show and let us know what you think.
No, yes, no. Well, no, I crossed my mind.
Visit KDAL610.com to podcast today's show anytime.
What'd you say?
Listen to shows on demand and download for free. You can also subscribe via Spotify or your favorite podcast app. This has been the Bruce Siski Show. CBS News is up next. For more than 80 years, KDAL 103.9, W28 FBFM, and 610 KDAL Duluth Superior, a Midwest communication station. KDAL.